Moncrief on News Talk.
Since the lockdown, we have seen how many big and fancy jobs aren't so big and fancy. Keeping your local supermarket open has proven to be far more important. Yet many frontline or key workers are among the lower paid, a trend we've seen in Western society for decades. The university education is the best you can get, to the detriment of many other careers. As David Goodhart divides it up, careers that involve the head are deemed far more important than careers that involve the heart or the hand. He's the author of Head, Hand, Heart, and David Jones is now on News Talk. Afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Could you describe the period of time over which, if you like, the head economy became the preeminent one?
I guess this has been gathering steam over the last 30 years or so, sort of since the 1980s. I mean, you've seen a huge expansion of higher education in most rich liberal democracies. And I think, you know, some aspects of the kind of modern world have just tended to devalue more traditional things, more traditional work with the hand and crafts and caring, both in the care economy and indeed caring in the domestic realm, in the private realm. And I think, and this is perhaps one of the more controversial bits of the book, but I think it is true that career-focused modern feminism has in some ways contributed to the devaluing of care in the home and those who prioritized it. And obviously I'm in favor of women competing equally with men in the public sphere, but it seems to have been difficult to kind of balance those two things. So in all sorts of different ways, that the modern world has just become a great deal friendlier to cognitive forms of judgment and meritocracy, and much less friendly to forms of aptitude connected to the hand and the heart, as the language I use in my book.
But even in, you know, within the graduate sphere, that seems to have led to a something of an arms race where a graduate degree isn't worth as much as it used to be.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's bound to be a devaluation of the value of a degree when 30 or 40% of school leavers go to university, compared to when I went to university, it was only sort of 7 or 8%. One of my arguments is, I mean, my main argument is simply that that one form of human aptitude, cognitive ability, has become too much the gold standard of human esteem. And like I say, we've drawn away prestige and respect to some extent from other forms of aptitude, and we've created sort of too narrow a definition of what it is to lead a successful life. You know, pass your exams at school, go to a more or less good university, have a more or less successful professional career, and what's more, there's a kind of single ladder, a single sort of funnel into that zone of safety and success in our societies, when there used to be lots of little ladders up, and there used to be promotion from below. You know, you could join an organization, be recognized for being hardworking and reasonably smart, and you could kind of climb up a ladder. Now you pretty much always have to have a degree, even a further degree, before you can get anywhere in an organization. But the point is, this is now coming to an end. You know, that we've reached what I call peak head, partly because it turns out the knowledge economy doesn't actually need that many knowledge workers. And you're seeing this already in the, to return to the point you were making, we're seeing the early signs of that. I mean, you know, AI hasn't really started up yet, or at least on any big scale, but we're already seeing it in the decline of the graduate income premium. You know, it used to be sort of 50 or 60% above those who didn't go to college. It's now, in the UK anyway, fallen to, for a big proportion of particularly male graduates, it's fallen to, you know, around 10%. And also you see a huge number of graduates not in graduate jobs, even 5-10 years after employment. That's even the case, given a very elastic definition now of what a graduate job is. So you've created a kind of crisis of expectations. I mean, I think that some of the kind of political eruptions we've seen recently in Western countries, I mean, Sanders in the US and Jeremy Corbyn in the UK, I think are partly to do with creating a sort of a crisis of expectations among people who are expecting these highly prestigious, well-paid professional jobs, and end up doing jobs that their non-graduate parents might have done, doing relatively routinized clerical jobs or whatever.
Yeah. And I suppose at the same time, if the knowledge economy isn't going to provide as many jobs as people would have thought, and I'm using that term very broadly, automation is also eroding the amount of hand jobs available. That's very unfortunately phrased, but you take my point.
Yeah, I did go through the book very carefully, taking out that phrase wherever it appears. That's true, but we've kind of been through that already. I mean, you know, blue collar jobs have already been, many of the blue collar jobs that can be automated already have been. But there are a lot of very basic jobs that will never be and can never be automated. And a lot of those are caring jobs, face-to-face jobs of various kinds, cleaning jobs, caring for young children, caring for old people. A lot of these kinds of jobs have been traditionally been done by women. I mean, interestingly enough, it's the female sector, particularly the sort of lower end of the labour market, dominated by women, that's in a sense most protected from either robots or internationalization. You know, you can't have Chinese people caring for your old people because they're in China.
Yes.
And one of the really interesting things I think about this whole kind of head, hand, heart, and how we need to sort of shift from head to hand and heart somewhat is whether men will start moving into so-called pink collar jobs in larger numbers. I mean, in the UK, I think about 80% of NHS nurses are female, 12% of men, and that's increased only, I think, 1 percentage point since the year 2000. I mean, you're seeing a little bit of a movement, but I think that you might see quite a big shift in there, perhaps over the next 10 or 20 years.
Now, and interestingly, you wrote this book pre-COVID, and I imagine the pandemic is proving your point for you, because what we regard as frontline workers, essential workers, are the ones we pay the least, or, you know, far down the scale at least.
Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, and it has reinforced the point that, many of the key workers, as you say, were people without college degrees. And I think it's reinforced the fact that, you know, there are people doing incredibly valuable jobs that we hadn't sort of recognized, you know, the people... You know, but the people who are sort of maintaining the hidden wiring of our lives, you know, in rich societies that we hadn't really kind of noticed before. And I think we do notice them now. And I think that will be one of the sort of benign longer term effects of the pandemic, that, you know, we used to frighten our children with the idea that if you don't do your homework, you're going to end up stacking shelves in Tesco's. Well, when it turns out the stacking shelves in Tesco's is an absolutely vital social function. Probably most of us still don't want our children to be doing that job, but we recognize its importance and we want it to be respected and well paid, or, you know, well paid enough. You know, we want high minimum wages for jobs like that and a degree of respect. Their role in the system is very important. I think that goes for a lot of the other jobs too that we were clapping for in the early stages. I mean, nurses and doctors are already relatively well respected and already relatively well paid, particularly doctors, but even nurses in the NHS are not badly paid. The Cinderella service in the UK, and probably in Ireland too, is much more social care homes and adult social care, which tends to be, a lot of that tends to be minimum wage. And it's interesting how, it's what I call sort of cognitive creep. I mean, that you get, if you ask an economist, why is it that people in social care are so poorly paid? They will say, oh, well, because anyone can do it. Meaning it doesn't need any significant cognitive type qualification. But we know anyone who's spent more than 5 minutes in a hospital or an old people's home know perfectly well that, like in any other walk of life, there are good carers, there are okay carers, and there are really pretty rubbish carers. But we sort of don't. So in some ways, although I'm quite critical of the idea of meritocracy, at least as a sort of organizing ideal, I mean, obviously everyone's in favor of meritocratic selection for jobs, particularly top jobs. You know, you want you don't want to be operated on by a surgeon who's failed their exams. But in a funny kind of way, we actually almost want more meritocracy in some areas connected with hand and heart. We want more judgment as to more differentiation between and more reward for the really good carers, not just assuming, oh, well, that's just a sort of, there's a sort of old fashioned sort of sexist assumption that, women are naturally nurturing and caring and therefore, well, it doesn't really need to be rewarded. It's a sort of natural instinct. But it doesn't be rewarded, because we have massive recruitment crises in nursing, in social care these days. We have massive recruitment crises also in the skilled trades, in a lot of the kind of middling technical functions, because we've shoved so many kids down the academic path and into university. I mean, I think this is true in Ireland as well as in the UK. And we've now, and as you were saying, we've kind of ended up devaluing the academic route in some ways, while leaving these other things, that the cupboard is bare. You look around, where are the skilled trades? I mean, they've disappeared. People, hundreds of thousands of people used to do HNDs and HNCs in this country. I don't know if you had the same system, higher national diplomas, what do they call HNCs, higher national certificates. I think, these were the kinds of things you did in night school, to become a plumber or an electrician, or you did a diploma, a part-time diploma at an FE college. These kinds of things have sort of shrunk to invisibility because, so many people, obviously I'm not against high intelligence. We need it probably more than ever in our human societies. We need teams of clever people to find a vaccine for the bloody COVID-19. We need people to work out how to suck carbon out of the atmosphere and things like that. I mean, obviously we need highly intelligent people, but we've got this sort of bloated cognitive class, many of whom are not particularly suited to sort of higher academic functions, many of whom are not even doing higher academic functions, having gone through an academic education. As I said earlier, they're often doing increasingly routinized kind of clerical or administrative jobs that don't require, significant analytical ability or significant judgment. There's something that there's a couple of academics, Phil Brown and Hugh Lauder, talk about, something called digital Taylorism. So that a lot of the jobs that used to, I mean, the classic example here is the bank manager, the bank manager who used to know all of the businesses in his or her area and would make, would be in a position to make judgments about whether to loan the bank's money to people. And now they've been replaced by an algorithm. And the bank manager only has a role, I guess, when the algorithm's decisions are challenged. But you see that, like I say, and this is even before artificial intelligence has really taken over a lot of those sort of middle and lower level kind of cognitive functions. Mm. So I think, so when I started writing this book, Head, Hand, Heart, I sort of thought it was a bit kind of utopian. I mean, slightly new agey almost. I also discovered Head, Hand, Heart turns out to be the motto of the very progressive English private school Beedales. But as the more I kind of researched it as I was going along, the more I realized this is sort of going to happen anyway. I mean, that partly because, as I say, the knowledge economy doesn't need so many knowledge workers. So we're going to have to readjust our reward and the way that we sort of the status we allocate. Now, status allocation is not something that's in the gift of politicians, really. It's something that sort of we all have to do. It's a sort of society-wide thing. And I think, as we were saying earlier, and I think the pandemic has perhaps sort of helped a little bit to nudge us in that direction and see that the importance of a lot of basic jobs that were perhaps invisible before.
Well, we shall see, I suppose. The book is called Head, Hand, Heart: The Struggle for Dignity and Status in the 21st Century. David Goodhart, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moncrief on News Talk.